Welcome, everyone. Tuesday Talk Show in progress this morning. Thank you very much for joining us. We're coping with the weather right now, as everybody is. But this is the Tuesday Talk Show. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. But in the meantime, if you want to jot down the phone number, it's 541-472-1270. And we'll let you air your question or comment to our guest live after the top of the hour news. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. In the meantime, let's get started this morning. It is the first Tuesday of February, so that means that we have city councilors in, and joining us this morning are city councilor Rob Pell and Joel King has joined us now. And gentlemen, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Thank you for braving the elements and joining us here this morning on KAJO.
Thanks for having us, Chuck.
All right.
Good morning.
All right. Everything squared away, Joel?
I think so.
Okay. All right. All right. Gentlemen. I'm going to start off this morning a little bit different than we normally have been, because I want to go back a little bit to the very first Tuesday talk show that we had this year, and that would have been last the first Tuesday in January, when we had Mayor Scherf and Councillor Junker in, and that was a Tuesday prior to a special Tuesday afternoon meeting. And at that meeting is when the subject of closing the J Street campground came into being. And I have an excerpt from that particular show that I'd like to play for you right now. The first voice you hear will be mine asking a question. The second voice, I believe, is Councillor Junker's. He resigned later that day. I take up his position as a state representative. And then you'll hear Mayor Scherf. Now, here is that actuality.
Are we opening ourselves up to another?
Once again, the last voice you heard was Mayor Clint Scherf talking about, at the very first Tuesday of January, talking about the closure of the J Street campground and the restriction of the other campground to just an overnight camping space. Now, that being said, just to recap a little history, they did eventually close that J Street campground. They did delay it for a couple of weeks there, and I think it was January 20th that it finally was closed. It is closed now, and this posted on our news, KAJO's news this morning. The Josephine County judge on Monday ordered the city of Grants Pass to stop taking any enforcement against homeless campers for 2 weeks, pending a deeper review of the new legal challenge. Disability Rights Oregon filed a lawsuit last Thursday to halt the city of Grants Pass from closing one of two sanctioned homeless camps and restricting the hours of the other. Josephine County Judge Brandon S. Thusen signed a temporary restraining order that prohibits the city of Grants Pass from citing, arresting, detaining, fining, or otherwise prosecuting any person for camping anywhere in the city for the next 14 days. Gentlemen, where does that leave the city of Grants Pass right now and the homeless people?
That's a great question, and we all, of course, want to know the answer. We've got an executive session with our city attorney tomorrow night, and hopefully he'll shed a little more light on some of the specific legal ramifications. As it is right now, as we all know, the unhoused people can be back in our parks because of this temporary restraining order. They can be back at the apparently back at J Street, back on 7th Street, or for that matter, pretty much anywhere they want to be in town. So actually that may be a little bit of an overstatement, but they certainly can be. They're allowed back in our parks. They're allowed everything that we hoped for the last 4 to 5 years of getting them out of the parks and having them in a place where they could be more easily monitored. That's all been undone, and we're waiting to see where we go from here.
All right, Joel, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, it's always there's always a legal right to sue, and there's a lot of nonprofits out there for those that can't afford on their own to sue that will sue for you, and that's not a bad form of government. It balances power, and it's not to be unexpected. I view it as risk management in terms of the city, including the welfare of the unsheltered. And unfortunately, we've given it over to the judge to decide rather than the elected representatives. The worst case would be is that people are back in the park for 2 weeks, and then the judge will decide permanently what would, or not permanently, but on a more permanent basis what would happen. And the other thing about it is there would be no time restrictions, which is, that's brutal. I'm not the judge.
All right.
One of the things that we have now is this is water over the bridge. We got to recognize where we're at. We got to take responsibility. Legal advice is always good. And we don't want to seek legal advice that we want to hear. We need to seek the truth and what we need to hear. And there's a difference between those two. Sometimes we go and seek professionals' help to what we want to hear. Well, if I go to the doctor and I want to hear something and it's not the truth, it doesn't help me. So that's what we're doing in our executive session, and we're moving on and see what we can do to make things even better.
All right. Well, right now what the people want to know and need to know right now is exactly where we are right now. And from what I'm reading here and from my understanding is right now, the homeless can camp anywhere in the city on public property.
Correct.
That's correct. If they move into the park, do the old-time place and manner restrictions still hold, or are those out the window also? Do we have a reading on that?
I'm not a lawyer, but it's my understanding that there's no time restrictions at this point in time for this two-week period.
All right. Well, the time, place, and manner restrictions in the park didn't have time ramifications on it, did it?
You had to move after a certain period of time?
Yeah.
All right. So those basically out the window. What are we getting a reading from our law enforcement people on what this is going to do to their situation?
I have not. I know that it certainly can't be good news in terms of their workload. It's going to impact a lot of people. And it is what it is.
Well, with regards to perspective from law enforcement, I just have to believe that it's got to be really difficult for the boots on the ground, because they're going to be getting a lot of calls from other citizens complaining about tents and so on and so forth. And they're the ones that are going to have to basically deliver the bad news that for the time being, there's not much that they can do. So they're in a situation that they're going to be asked to enforce things that they legally can't do. So it's an unenviable position for law enforcement, in my opinion.
So they can camp anywhere, and the only reason law enforcement could intervene is if they're, quote, breaking a law, right. And there's no law on camping in the city.
Right, exactly.
All right. Which way do you see the council going on this right now? Or do you have a feel for that, or do we need to wait for this executive session?
We need to wait for the executive session. First off, we need to accept where we're at, take responsibility for it, and then move forward in a positive manner that is good for the unsheltered population as well as the citizens of Grants Pass.
So I have just one other kind of perspective on that. When you ask where is the council going to go, the first thing that I hope council does is show up to the executive session and listen to the lawyer. Because they refused to do that on the night of January 7th. They did not want to listen to our city attorney. As a lot of people know, because the meeting was held on such short notice, he had another meeting already scheduled that night in a different city. And he couldn't be there for the whole time. He was there for about an hour or two and then had to leave. And he said, please don't do anything until you let me weigh in. So they acted without, intentionally, very, very intentionally, acted without hearing our city attorney speak to us, and that's what they chose to do on January 7th. I'm hoping that on Wednesday night they choose to actually show up to the executive session and listen to the legal advice this time, and whether we choose to follow that legal advice exactly as it's given, that remains to be seen. There's been plenty of times, and Joel knows, in executive sessions, I've been pretty hard on some of the lawyers, and sometimes I think they're giving us good advice or advice that makes sense, and other times, and we followed their advice sometimes, and we take a modified course. But I'm hoping that at least the city council shows up to the executive session and we all listen to what the attorney has to tell us.
All right, Joel, you mentioned that finding an attorney that's going to tell you what you want to hear as opposed to the truth. Are we going to find that out? Is that going to happen on Wednesday night?
He's going to tell us what we need to hear. I have full confidence in that.
All right. Do you have any indication on what he's going to say?
At this point in time, I'm not a lawyer, and that's why we have him.
All right.
So, I can speculate, but it would not be appropriate.
Any guidance from the city manager on this?
I think he wants to seek the legal advice as well, because he's in the same position I am. He's not a lawyer, and this is a fairly complex subject, and we need to take informed risks to take care of people. And all of our population.
You know, what's frustrating, too, is and a lot of people have never really had any interactions with a lawyer in their personal life, fortunately. But, you know, you go into an executive session and you've got eight counselors who are trying to ask good questions. You've got a city manager who might be asking good questions, and you might have one or sometimes two attorneys that are trying to answer them. With all that said, very often you don't get a definitive answer, and the attorneys will sometimes acknowledge they don't have a definitive piece of advice for us. So they usually, lawyers usually err on the side of extreme caution. Lawyers generally do that. But sometimes there is no, right now, you know, the objectively reasonable clause in our state law, which, you know, says that we've got to come up with something for the homeless that would be considered objectively reasonable. That hasn't been tested in court until now. That was one of the first questions I asked one of our attorneys. Has this, you know, is there case law on this? And he said, no, not yet. And this was back in the summer. So right now it looks like we are becoming
the test case.
Exactly.
We're the
exactly.
test case. Again.
Well, I was at the League of Oregon Cities where there were counsels from all across the state, and we had a legal representative talk to us on this subject. And we asked him that question, you know, what are the risks and what do we need to do? And he was silent.
No answer. I see. All right. Let's, by way of explanation right here, some of the public out there might not understand what executive session really is. It's basically a secret meeting with the counselors and the people involved in whatever the discussion might be. Nothing is allowed to come out of that. The press is allowed to attend, but only to observe, in essence, to keep, I suppose, counselors honest and that sort of thing. But there is no reporting allowed on that.
Well, I wouldn't call it a secret meeting. It's a confidential meeting.
Confidential.
And it's to protect client-attorney privilege. And you do it when you're buying property.
And to protect the people participating, I assume.
And it's to protect the public interest.
I believe there's only two subjects that we're allowed to meet behind closed doors on. That would be if we're being sued, if the city's being sued, you wouldn't want the other side to hear what our strategy might be. I think also if we're trying to negotiate to purchase property or something like that, we're allowed to also meet there. And I think also for personnel evaluation. So things that and the press is there to make sure that we don't talk about things that are not permitted in executive session. They're there to make sure that whatever we're speaking about is appropriate for behind closed doors discussion.
All right. I just wanted to make that clear for the public out there who might not understand what we're talking about when we say executive session. Now, to that end, and talking about the homeless, we have a kind of a situation here where the National Weather Service said might get a little snow yesterday afternoon, and we got 5 inches before they said it was going to arrive here. What's that done to the homeless population? Do we know where they are? Is there a shelter out there that you two might be aware of right now?
Well, there's several shelters out there. We just had several nonprofits present what they've been doing to the council yesterday. It was a great meeting. Whether or not the warming shelter was open yesterday, I should know. I think it was open. It should have been open. Whether it was or not, I don't know. The other thing is the city, you know, I had people come up and tell me, you know, I can't get my kids to school. And she wanted me to help her, which, I'd be glad to help her as an individual. But it's not city's council's responsibility to tell people where to go. It's to have places available, perhaps, where they can get help. And same thing with school. There's the Oregon Department of Children's Services. There's several nonprofits. And there's a parent responsibility. And there's also the foster kid system. And so to come to me to say, you need to help me get my kids to school, I'll refer them to those other resources, but we're not going to have a policy change that gets those kids to school.
All right, just we'll follow up on that. All the schools are closed today, folks. And tonight's basketball game has been canceled.
Oh,
actually, not canceled.
Oh, oh.
It's We're going to play it on Thursday night. That's going to happen on Thursday night. So be advised and stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after this.
Imagine having...
Welcome back, everyone. Tuesday Talk Show and Progress. City Councilors in studio right now. Rob Pell. Joel King. Both are in with us today. And, of course, we've been talking about the homeless situation and what has happened with the lawsuit. And it's right now on hold for 14 days, and we don't know what's going to happen after that 14 days. Do we have any suspicions, or what would you like to see happen at the end of that 14 days? Do we have any options right now, or do we have to wait for that executive session?
Well, I think we need to wait for that executive session, and we need to also take an examination of ourselves, take responsibility for where we're at, and make good decisions moving forward. And what those decisions would be, whether it's action to mitigate the charges against us, or whether it's whatever it is, we just need to consider that.
Joel, I'll give you a magic wand. Wave it and fix this problem. Throw you under the bus, did I?
So at this point in time, I'm only one of eight counselors. I'm going to give you a weasel answer. Is that okay?
No. You have the magic wand. You have the power.
Well, I feel I can fix it, but I don't want to jeopardize. In a lawsuit, you don't talk about things over the radio and discuss them that way. You discuss them with your lawyer. You discuss them with your fellow council people, and then, because I don't know everything either at this point in time, and I don't want to jeopardize anything.
So. All right, I'm taking the magic wand back, Rob. Rob, here's your magic wand. Fix it.
Well, Joel just refused to step into the trap, the bear trap. I mean, do I look like the dummy here?
Just giving you the opportunity.
I'm sure Chuck and Joel and I, we would all have our opinion, and you'd be able to say yours on the radio, and we would be foolish, especially before the executive session, to throw things like that around. But I mean, you know that there's hopefully eight people on the council that have some basic level-headed ability to look at things, and after we talk to the lawyer, hopefully we'll have a better way to move forward.
All right, well, let's...
And there's always options.
There's always options. Okay. Are there other areas that we're looking at as a potential campground if we need one? Has that been discussed?
Historically, we've looked at a lot of different sites. And so, obviously, there are alternative sites that exist.
Because J Street had to move anyway before May.
Right. The other thing is, I don't know if you've been to J Street, but... It was not a pretty sight in terms of a campground. I wouldn't want anybody to stay there, to be honest with you.
I've heard horror stories, but none that I'd relay over the air because I just heard.
You know, getting back to the magic wand,
okay.
The one thing that I would absolutely, and I'll bet Joel would agree with me, is if I could wave a magic wand and make it really clear for the city council and for law enforcement and all the nonprofits to make it really clear who are the drug addicted and the mentally ill, and as contrasted with people who are essentially just down on their luck and homeless because they've lost a job or a house got sold out from under them or that kind of thing, to be able to differentiate those two groups would be a huge, that's how I'd use my magic wand. So I would have a different feeling, a little bit different feeling towards one group than I would for the other. And I'd like to be able to have case management navigation centers be able to help us all differentiate between the different types of homeless people that we're dealing with.
Our reports show about 400 of the population of about 400 homeless people, and that's estimated, I assume. Do you have any idea the percentage of each group that you just talked about within that 400? Is it 50-50? Is it 70-30 one way or the other? The really disadvantaged who are there through bad economics or the bad actors?
I don't know. I do have anecdotal notes where I go down and I meet people, and I've met both groups. You talked about the magic wand. I think there's a four-legged stool dealing with the unsheltered that we need to consider. One is the social services. Two is housing, which the last council addressed fairly well. Three is accountability. And accountability is, you know, if I'm running a first-grade class and those that behave socially irresponsible, if I reward those and then I punish the folks that aren't behaving socially or that are behaving socially responsible, what happens to my class? It becomes chaos. And so there's people out there that are behaving very responsibly in all social groups, including the unhoused, and they're getting punished. And then there's people that aren't behaving socially responsible, and they're getting rewarded. And I got examples of both. And we need to not have that dynamic, because that's an inverse incentive for folks. And then the fourth one is economic development. And I would just say really, really quickly, so let's say marbles are money. And let's say you're playing on the schoolyard. How do you get more marbles? Well, you can get more marbles by taking marbles from other people. That's what Putin's doing right now.
Okay.
And but there's another way.
I'm out of time for this time right now, but okay. We'll pick up where your marbles are when we come back right after news.
Okay.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in Progress, ladies and gentlemen. Number to call is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guests. Our guests today, Joel King and Rob Pell from the Grants Pass City Council. And just before the news, let's see, how do I phrase this without, Joel was just losing his marbles at the All right. We were talking about the fourth leg of your four-legged stool.
Yes. The first three legs, again, were social services, housing, accountability, and then the last is economic development. And so if you think of marbles as money, on the schoolyard, the way you get more marbles is you take them from other people. You have redistribution of marbles. Putin is really good at that. Well, Alexander Hamilton, during our Constitution back then, a brilliant man, he put in the Constitution that if somebody comes up with an idea that generates more marbles, they can benefit from that. And that was the first time that individuals benefited from their own inventions rather than governments. And it really took off, and the United States started making a lot of marbles. And we have to this day through that process. And so if you look at social services, all that's doing is redistributing marbles. If you look at economic development, that's creating new marbles for people, and they can get jobs and self-respect, housing, support social services, all those other three legs of the stool. So four legs, again, are social services, economic development, accountability, don't punish the wrong people. And the last one was accountability.
Economic development?
Economic development.
All right. So the city and the county just need to make more marbles.
The government doesn't make marbles.
All right.
They can print money, but it's not more marbles. Right.
We've been talking about the homeless for the most part here, and I want to move on to a little bit here. What is the status of the Parker House right now? I know that the situation was that the city so far has denied their grant to purchase the Parker House, and I'm not sure of the status over there. I do know I see a lot of traffic there.
So it is a warming shelter, and Mint is have some sponsors, or perhaps raise the money themselves. They haven't divulged that, to pay rent to Bi-Mart. The building still does not meet code for a full-time residence. It doesn't have sprinklers, doesn't have escape doors. It's got broken beams up in the attic. So it doesn't meet code for that, but it is open as a warming shelter, temporary shelter, and Mint is operating and doing a fantastic job.
All right. Rob, we've been talking about homeless, and we had a homeless forum here, and I know you wanted to talk a little bit about that homeless forum, and that was yesterday. Bring us up to speed on that, would you please?
Sure, and just very briefly, getting back to, I think, one of your questions was, what percentage of the – the unhoused right now might be of the, we'll say, down on their luck, good, hardworking, clean and sober people versus, we'll say, maybe more of the vagrant type that might be breaking a lot of laws. And I don't have a, nobody has an exact number on that, but it's been my feeling over the years looking at this situation. I believe it's about a 70-30 situation. I think about 30% of the unhoused, if they were given a hand up this year, in 1 or 2 years, they would be in a better place, potentially maybe contributing members of society again, maybe working, maybe tax paying and that sort of thing. And where their mindset is now, I think about 70% of what we're seeing out there would need either some kind of drug counseling and or mental health counseling, whatever, to be able to make something constructive happen out of any money that we might put towards them. I think maybe 30%, as much as 30%, might really benefit from a hand up. And I'm not saying that our city government should be the ones to provide that, but I'm thinking the nonprofits that we heard speak with us yesterday, which was a really positive meeting because so many of them are really doing a lot of good work, and they all are very, very dedicated. None of them are getting rich on it, regardless of some accusations that there's people making a lot of money on the homeless deal. I didn't see anybody at that meeting yesterday that drove up in a fancy car or anything like that. They're all really functioning, I think, from their heart, quite frankly. But there were two or three things that I really, and there's a lot of good work and there was a lot of good to come out of that, but there were two kind of data points that I found interesting, that the, representative from OnTrack shared with us. OnTrack is, a drug treatment, organization. And, one thing was, is that she said from all the data that they've collected that the majority of the people that they see are from Josephine and Jackson County. They are not from out of the area. And we've heard those accusations that the homeless are coming from all over the country and all that stuff. And that wasn't her observation. And I believe at least one of the other people there also echoed that same thought, that most of who they're dealing with are local people that have local ties. They may have local families, maybe grew up here. So I found that to be helpful from a council perspective. The other thing that she mentioned was, and this was really startling, is they have 40 beds at OnTrack for people that are waiting to get into drug treatment. People who have said, geez, I've had enough, I want to get into treatment. And they've got, I think, 40 beds for people that are waiting to find treatment. And that treatment could be anywhere in the state. They could help them get the treatment. But they have a waiting list of 330 people for those 40 beds. And the biggest challenge that they have is that while the people are on the waiting list, they lose track of a lot of them. They don't know where they go. Maybe their phones get shut off. Those people, there's no place to easily find those people when their treatment bed opens up somewhere. Very often we've missed the opportunity to reach those people because we had no way to keep them in a safe place where we could easily monitor them and tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, you've got a bed now. So that was really startling, that there's 330 people on the waiting list for 40 beds.
All right, Rob, do we know where those 330 people waiting for those bids are from? Are we talking Josephine County for 330? Are we talking Josephine and Jackson County, or is that statewide?
This wouldn't be statewide. This is the local provider on track, and she didn't differentiate, I don't think, between Jackson and Josephine County. She also made the point that sometimes from Northern California, because there's no major cities or treatment or anything like that, whether it's, you know, in the Crescent City area, whether it's north of Shasta, sometimes some of that's coming from Northern California too, but it's not like they're bussing them up from San Francisco or LA. That wasn't the impression I got. It's more from rural Northern California, which is not far, obviously, from
neighbors.
Where we are.
Neighbors.
Exactly.
Neighbors.
Thank you. Yeah.
The other thing that OnTrack did was they, using money from Measure 110, the funding coming from the state, they put in what they called emergency shelter for those folks trying to relieve and address that problem, but it's not large enough for the population. The other thing is the people that are seeking treatment live in this county. The people that aren't seeking treatment, we're not sure where they're from.
All right. Now, going back to that 70-30 percentage, Rob, with 30% looking for a hand up that would help and make them productive citizens again within the economy, to that 70%, How do we go about attacking that 70%? Forced intervention is not something that can happen with the U.S. Constitution, unless a crime is committed. So is that where we have to rely on the nonprofits going in and talking to people, or do they just have to hit rock bottom and come in?
So one of the things.
Thank you, Rob.
And Rob's got some great ideas on this as well. One of the things on that four-legged stool is accountability. Right now, if I steal blue jeans from Bi-Mart, and I've seen it happen, I carry it out right in front of the sales clerk. She sees it, and I kind of smile at her and tell her thank you for the blue jeans. And there's no consequences for that action. I get rewarded for treating Bi-Mart and the business in an unfair and disrespectful manner.
All right,
let me finish.
There is, because almost daily, we have reports here of arrests being made at any one of the retailers around town. Winco, Bi-Mart, Walmart, Bi-Mart, mm-hmm. all of them have loss prevention and significant loss prevention programs.
True, and go talk to them. Talk to the clerks. See what's going on.
Well, we know there are arrests being made. Now, how long they're incarcerated or what that revolves.
Well, that's the next point. So then do they get prosecuted? Do they get suffer the consequences of their own choices? Or do they get put back on the street?
Yeah, well, we're seeing them get back on the street pretty quickly.
Yes. And so they get rewarded for their behavior and the rest of us get punished.
They don't get to keep the jeans, though.
But you know, Chuck, you mentioned a really good point, because when we talk about what I would call the catch and release, unfortunately, the catch and release criminal justice system that we have here, you've got representatives from Grants Pass here in the studio today, but this goes way beyond Grants Pass, because our police, and it has to be really, I would think, very demoralizing for the police to be seeing people back on the street 10, 15. There was one story in the Courier the other day, 17 times this person had been arrested in the last year and released. And so the bottom line is, we could pump a lot of money into our police department, but we're not going to arrest our way out of our homeless situation. We need some help from the county and potentially the state. And frankly, we're not getting it. We don't have a municipal court in Grants Pass. There's very limited. Once our police arrest somebody, we are then, as a city, kind of at the mercy of the county and the state to do what's right. And we have not been getting support from either one of them to the degree that's even remotely close to appropriate.
Very little jail resources.
Well, there's no doubt. First of all, we know that the Grants Pass Police Department, as professional as it is understaffed. And that's documented. We do know that the jail is not operating at capacity. I don't think it ever has, just because of the economic situation of the county. So the county doesn't have any funds to put towards it. So it's got to come from the state and feds. Is there an answer? Where do we look?
So one of the things the council did was establish a committee. You know, if you don't know what you're doing, you establish a committee. That's bureaucracy, right? And so and we got different citizens that bring different resources and are going to staff out that issue. And they're going to get back to us on options and alternatives. The other thing is, we got the budget coming up. We're going to have to look very critically at the general fund and see what we're spending dollars on. The general fund, besides the property taxes, which 100% go towards public safety, the general fund fills the bucket for the rest of it, for most of the rest of it. And we're going to have to look very critically at what we're spending dollars on and what's the priority in the city budget.
All right. Rob, it looked like you wanted to weigh in on something there.
Well, yeah, the name of it, actually, the Public Safety Advisory Committee is what Joel was referencing. And it's a brand new committee. It was just established. We just filled the people on it. And we're really hoping, I'm really hoping, and this is an idea that Valerie Lovelace brought back to the council last year. And I'm really hoping that you have really, I know we have some really dedicated people on that committee. And that's the type of person that will study what's going on in other cities. And they'll spend hours and maybe even make field trips and go to these places and bring us back, you know, what maybe best practices are from around the state. Because frankly, our staff doesn't have that much time and manpower to do some of the in-depth research that's really probably going to be required.
Well, folks, we're not going to answer all of the questions. We're not going to solve the universe here today, but we're going to try. And we'll do that when we come back right after this. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Tuesday Talk Show. City councilors are in studio, and I think we have a caller holding on right now. Good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guests? Evidently, they couldn't wait. We apologize. Once again, the number is 541-472-1270. And let's see. No, the light is still there, but there's no one online. All right, well, we'll... all right. Trying to save it there. I'm not sure that we did. Once again, 541-472-1270 if you have a question or comment for our guest. All right, so where does this homeless go from here, both from a homeless standpoint and from a government standpoint? Any ideas, any direction to point, or do we still need to wait and hear from all the attorneys? We've got places they can go, and I know that the police are armed with brochures and can tell the people where to go to get the help that they need, whether it's drug intervention, a place to get warm. I know the Gospel Rescue Mission's on that list, several other places.
So, again, I refer to the four-legged stool as to where we go. We continue to work on housing. The last council, like I said, made huge progress in housing. We look at accountability, and that has to involve the court system, the jail system, some things that are beyond the city control, but we need to start addressing those things. And we have a committee chartered to do that, and hopefully they come up with some good options for us. We have social services that we continue to support or facilitate. We don't have a whole lot of money, especially given the situation of our public safety folks, but we need to they're an important part of that stool. And then the last leg for the stool to stand up is that economic development. We need to make more marbles and create wealth so that we can do the other three legs of the stool.
All right. Gentlemen, we're getting to towards the end of the program here. We do have a city council meeting coming up tomorrow night, and it looks pretty straightforward. There is a question there, the under council action, an ordinance adopting an amendment to the sewer system development charges update. Do we have an update on exactly what we're talking about there? Are we going to increase? Are we going to give breaks? Are we going to try to encourage more development through the SDCs?
That certainly is a possibility.
Okay. Do I have the right agenda in front of me?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry. What point are you asking about, Chuck?
Council action A.
Okay. So my understanding of that is we actually this whole subject was not handled by our city very well. But in any event, it was a zoning issue of what people could do or what they are allowed to or what they even. With particular types of property. And the thing is, I guess this is allowing people to essentially, I think there's 18 property owners or something, that to essentially change their mind. We thought that we had this kind of nailed down last year, and I think we've got a certain number of people that actually want to have a different option that we are possibly going to allow them to take as of tomorrow. It's not a really big deal, in my opinion, but it's essentially going back and allowing people to, some of these property owners were given an ability to opt out of certain zoning changes that the city had made, and we're allowing them now to essentially get a second swing at it. That's my understanding of it. I don't think it's a really big deal, quite frankly.
All right, a couple of more questions, but in the meantime, I do think we have a caller online now. Good morning, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Good morning, and yeah, I do have a couple of points I'd like to make. One is that with all of the talk about the shortage of housing, which everyone knows is a fact, there are lots of available spaces in the city, but unfortunately, I have to say, you know, with experience, that the city makes it very difficult to rent some of these spaces that could be rented more reasonably than houses and so forth by way of very high fees and very restrictive and sometimes unreasonable regulations. And I think that that everybody, officials, need to take a look at that. There's a lot of spaces sitting vacant that shouldn't be. So that's my first point. My second point is that I just want to ask the question, are we responsible here as citizens of Grants Pass, are we responsible for providing a living space for every person that wants to live in Grants Pass? You know, Grants Pass is a beautiful town, no doubt. But I know that just from experience of having a long life, that there are areas that in the country that I traveled to that I thought were beautiful, that I thought I'd love to live here, but I knew I couldn't afford it. So my question is, there are other states and other areas that are much more affordable, and are we responsible to be, make sure that everyone, do we have to guarantee everyone a space to live? And I don't mean just homeless. That's not what all I'm referring to. I'm just saying people need to look at it, and is it reasonable here and within in their means or not? And other places may be much more so. The other thing, as far as housing goes, we do have a lot of low-income housing currently, and still there's a huge waiting list for it. But I think we have a shortage of workforce housing. And although officials always talk about economic development, I would say in the last 35 years, I really haven't seen much of that here. I haven't seen much economic development bringing in good paying jobs. You know, we have industrial land that's not being utilized. And so maybe we need to bring in somebody on staff that's capable, that understands how to make that work and how to bring in some new companies and some new industry that would provide living wages for a family. And then also we need to provide more workforce housing,
right,
if that's going to happen. So those are my points.
All right. If you'll hold on a second, Ward, I know I'm short on time, but I want to give the counselors an opportunity to reply. Rob,
sure. You've
been taking notes there furiously.
Yeah, the first comment, the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, do we owe everyone a place to live, or the ability to even rent a place to live? And I can say that as an employer of people that essentially, you know, make between, $15 and $30 an hour, which is probably many of our service industry employees, is probably representative. Bottom line is they don't have a big choice of places to live. If one of them is forced out of their house because it gets sold or whatever, their landlord wants them out for some reason, it's tough. So since we do rely a lot on tourism and a lot of service industry jobs, we need a lot of housing that people in that income sector can afford. And sometimes there's an overlap with low income housing because they're taking some of the middle housing that the workforce should be in. But the bottom line is we need a lot more, whether it's low-income housing, yes, we do, and workforce housing, we definitely need a lot of, because, again, we have a lot of retail and we have a lot of service industry employees.
So that wasn't my first point. My first point was the fact that there is a lot of available space out there, but city regulations and fees make it nearly impossible to lease many of those spaces. And that hasn't been talked about much, and it needs to be, in my opinion.
Well, that's, it's interesting generality without specifics. We can have a lot of different anecdotes from a thousand different people. But the bottom line is, on a case-by-case basis, we need to look at that and see what the reasons for a given situation.
All right. Is.
Well, it's been talked about in the past, but it really hasn't. There really hasn't been any movement there, and I think it's obvious. Drive around town, look, and you will see many spaces that are available that are nice living spaces. That should, and I know some of it is state restrictions.
Ward, I've just got to jump in here, and I appreciate your efforts and thank you for the call. But I am just,
sure.
I am
you
just,
gotta go.
I am just.
I called earlier, but something happened. I got disconnected.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I understand. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, thank you very much, Joel. Real quickly, you were almost ready to respond to that.
Oh, I said, the city is not responsible for providing a place to live for everybody that moves to the city, obviously. Workforce housing is a large component, Ward's correct, in terms of economic development, and we need to do more of that. And there's been very little, if economic development in the past. So in fact, we even lost Dutch Brothers, and they're moving out of the city. Due to some factors that are beyond our control, perhaps, but also due to the city environment. And we need to change that.
All right, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for venturing out in this treacherous travel environment that we have today. Thank you for joining us here. Oh, all right, you've got 20 seconds, Joel.
Oh, I just wanted to say, the tree committee is going to put together, and in fact, they're looking at the last draft of a forest management plan for the city of Grants Pass.
All right, and on equal time, 20 seconds for Rob.
Well, I appreciate all the emails and participation we get at council meetings. So people often ask, what can they do? And please communicate with your councilors as much as you can. That would be helpful.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate your time. And all of you, we appreciate your ears.